October is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, and I will be sharing my heartbreaking experience of having a miscarriage almost 2 years ago now. It's honestly crazy to even say the words 2 years ago because it feels so raw and so emotional still. I know that everyone who experiences a miscarriage or a pregnancy loss, everyone feels and reacts so differently. And if you're in the 1 in 4 club, which by the way is a club that none of us asked to be a part of, I just want you to know my heart goes out to you. I'm wrapping you up in a big hug. For so long, this was a topic that was very hush-hush, and you never knew who had a miscarriage, and all you saw were beautiful pregnancy announcements. And so more stories, more vulnerability, more of women's stories to make us all feel less alone. And I firsthand know how triggering these stories can also be. If you're not in a place where you are ready, maybe you're never in a place where you ever want to listen to a story about loss, that is perfectly okay. Please close out now. Please protect your heart. We are going to get real and raw and vulnerable with my own personal experience today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch's sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Finally, here we are. It's after bedtime, the kids are asleep, and it is time to get down. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Dina. We're the duo behind the ever-popular Instagram account Big Little Feelings, which helps you navigate all things parenthood.
But this is not a boring-ass parenting podcast. There will be inappropriate jokes, we will be getting down and dirty, so put those babies to bed, and let's have fun. Okay, it's after bedtime time.
We're here, finally. What a day.
Favorite. Okay, also my favorite part of the day is being with my children. Duh. Okay, I know today's episode is going to be a serious topic, but before we dive into that, could we just have like a bestie catch up? I am just dying. I've been dying all day for this. Can we just catch up for a minute?
I know. I feel like I'm never going to stop saying how tired I am, though. Every time I come here, I'm just like, I'm so tired.
I literally had the same thought right before you came over, was like, how many times can we talk about how tired we are on this podcast? Because it's like, I don't know anything else to talk about when we first sit down.
But also, why did no one tell you that you get so fucking tired when you're a parent?
I think they did. And then I think we thought like, oh, when they're newborns, they don't sleep. Then they do. And I just like, I heard it, but I didn't get it.
Yeah, I'm just embracing it. I'll never not be tired again.
Yeah, and I feel like it's okay to complain. I'm doing an air quotes, listener. Complain about that, because I feel like also, whether it's on social media and also just in real life, we're like, if you complain about one aspect of parenting, it somehow means like, you hate your children. Like, you hate, and it's like, bro, I love my children more than anything. The best, literal best moments of my life is just being with my kids, doing nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm soul crushingly exhausted right now in this moment.
Valid.
Okay.
The other fuck you one, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Is when people are like, well, then why'd you have kids? Yeah. You signed up for this. Yeah. And I'm just like, yeah, duh.
I'm tired.
I love them. I'm tired. What's the problem?
Like, would I just not have them? I don't understand. Also, by the way, I'm just going to put this out there. Before I had kids, I was tired. I was thinking that the other day.
You're a tired person.
Yeah, really. And I don't think everyone is. Like, my husband is bone crushingly tired now. You know, like, he is every husband, which is on the couch. Mike does it too.
Yeah.
The TV screens are blaring. Children are screaming. Toys are being, the dogs are barking, and they are dead asleep on a couch, mouth open,
midday.
Snoring, midday. So like, He's not a tired person and he's exhausted now. But before I had kids, I was an exhausted person. Like, I'm the person that in Mexico needs a midday nap from the vacation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm not that person. You're not just that. For the record. I get up at 5:30 sharp before kids. And I'd be like at my coffee shop, then at my second coffee shop, very then productive. At my job.
Very productive.
Yeah.
And then after your productivity period, more productivity, right? Yeah. Like even the rest is like productive. And yeah. You're just like, go, 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 go.
Could these both be trauma responses? Is what I'm getting to. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Here we are.
Oh, wow. Well, this is the forum for it. Big little feelings after bedtime. Trauma.
Speaking of trauma.
Sure.
We're laughing, but we're going to transition into today's topic, which is near and dear to your heart, especially the heartbreaking experience of pregnancy loss.
Yep. I look forward to this episode. It's a hard one. It's a hard one. So let's do it.
Okay. Okay, we're big believers that small, easy changes can have big results. And that goes for your skincare routine, too. These days, it's so confusing to know what product works for this and that and which work together in what order. So I'm just going to make it easy for you. The Work System from Dime Beauty. Dime Beauty is clean, it's high-end skincare that's affordable, and it really works. Dime didn't sacrifice performance just to make it clean, either. And when I say clean, by the way, Dime is 100% transparent about every single ingredient, so you can use their products daily with confidence. I do not have time to remember a 10-step routine. The Work System is everything you need in one powerful package. It includes a gentle cleanser, a toner, two incredible serums, and two luxurious moisturizers. Plus, with spring and summer around the corner, I love anything with sunscreen. Their Tinted Glow Wonder Screen with SPF 30 just came out in new shades, and it's amazing. Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally all 5 stars. Love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com now and unlock your discount. That's dimebeautyco.com. Dimebeautyco.com. It's about time you've checked out Dime.
Okay, well, I'm going to say that there's no real way to dive in. It feels awkward because it is awkward. It's not something that people talk about a whole lot. I'm so grateful that we live in the year that we live in and that people do start talking about it at all. But it feels awkward to talk about because it's just still not that common to talk about.
Not that common to talk about, but 1 in 4 of us, 1 in 4 pregnancies end in miscarriage. Yep. It is so, so common. And I think what is crazy to me is that women, you know, people are showing up to their workplace, going into meetings, still bleeding. Like, this is crazy, having to go through a normal day.
When I shared on our stories, I mean, the DMs that we got, thousands upon thousands of people who were miscarrying, like in a work meeting, they were at the school teaching and miscarrying. And even not only that, because there's no protocol. Like, do you go to your boss? Do you go to, like, and first of all, here's where it starts, by the way. Here's where it starts. And this episode's gonna be all over the place, by the way. This is where it starts, though, is if you want to keep your privacy during pregnancy, especially the early stage, you totally should. That is absolutely your right. But there's this, like, blanket rule that everyone cannot share before 12 weeks. And the whole theory is just in case, just in case. And then because you haven't told anyone, you can't be standing in your meeting. You can't be at the school. You can't be wherever you are and say, hey, something's happening. Like, I think I'm losing, I'm bleeding, whatever it may be. I mean, it's happening in a moment. You don't think it's going to happen to you. To me, it's like we should be telling people if it feels right to us, just in case. It's like the opposite. Just in case you're 1 in 4,
right?
People should probably know that. I would argue that your boss actually needs to know that you're pregnant so that you can go to them and you can tell them that something is wrong or something is off or you are bleeding. But here's where we fuck ourselves. Since no one knows that you're pregnant in the first place, you're standing there at work or wherever you are, it could be anywhere, and you actually can't even tell your boss or tell anyone that you're miscarrying because it was a secret in the first place. And then the incredibly isolating experience of afterwards, which we'll get into. But that whole experience right when it's happening, plus afterwards, still no one knows. No one knew. So you're not telling anybody. So you're not getting like flowers. You're not getting meals. Nobody's coming over to help you take care of the kids because nobody knew in the first place. And so it's just this like, there's really almost nothing else more isolating.
Right.
There really is nothing else more isolating.
So you're devastated and isolated like at the same time.
Seeing those like perfect photos and seeing the 12 weeks, like the first thing that happens to a lot of us, maybe not everybody, but to a lot of us is like, what did I do? Yeah. What did I do? And here I'm going to get emotional. But fuck, with mine, you'll remember, we flew to Los Angeles. It was the most exciting thing. We were doing a photo shoot for Big Little Feelings, which is the dream come true. I can't think of doing anything better for me, like my favorite thing on earth, meeting families that follow us. But I had started, there were like warning flags. If you remember, we were sitting on a fucking airplane. And remember the flight attendant? The flight attendant. This is a core memory.
Yeah.
I was listening to a voicemail about my levels being a red flag. And the fucking flight attendant, very rudely, not a nice way. I get that it's her job. Really rudely was telling me to put my phone away. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Do you distinctly remember that? Because I do.
As the recording was telling you that your HCG levels were dropping at an alarming rate.
And that's the first thing is like, everybody should just be kind. Like you can still say, put your phone away, but like, you don't know if somebody, what's happening to them. So then we flew to Los Angeles and I needed to get my levels checked again because we didn't know if we would need to start progesterone, whatever it was. Remember, it was a scramble, finding an urgent care. I remember the nurse saying two things, which was the first thing was something like, don't worry because stress is bad for the baby or something like that. Like the most fucking thing.
Like, Jesus Christ. Like, what? Like,
not stress right now. Like, how do you even control that?
No.
And I would argue, and you would probably argue too, as a therapist, it's probably much worse to shove a very natural feeling deep down, like what that would do to you physiologically.
That would stress you out, ironically.
That was the first thing she said. Sorry. I'm laughing as a response to drama. And so then the second thing she said to me as I'm in Los Angeles, I think at this point, this was the follow-up call. The second thing she said to me was, just take it really, really easy these next few days.
Yeah. And meanwhile...
And meanwhile,
signed up for an insane work project.
It's long days. The longest day we've had to date up until that point.
A literal 16-hour work day.
Literal, and you're running around and the adrenaline is coursing and even everything leading up to it, like finalizing the shoots. Like, this is just chaos. This is just like good chaos, but like 48 hours of sheer chaos. And I remember telling myself, because this is logical, I remember telling myself, like, that's not going to affect this. If the levels are not where they're at, no amount of stress, unless of course maybe it was like extreme, but like the stress and then working is probably not what's going to do it, because pregnancies last through like war times, trauma. If I were home, I'd still be quote unquote doing an 18-hour workday, taking care of like my children, you know, stay-at-home moms, they're carrying the kids all day. So logically, in that moment, I was like, sure, you know, and I remember trying really hard to just keep at least the stress down. Like, working is fine. Everybody can work. Women work. Like, fuck that. And I was just so stressed at keeping the stress down. But then that leads me all the way back to what we were talking about, which is the first thing for a lot of us is, what did I do? What did I do? And not even what did I do? It's like, I did this. Like, I did this. And when you see all of those perfect 12-week posts over and over and over and over and over, it's like, well, maybe if I was more like fucking Haley, she seems like she's glowing. She has a great husband. She doesn't seem stressed at all. She kept her fucking baby. Like, I didn't listen. I pushed. I did this. I did that. And like, I did this, you know? And I think if you saw 25% of people's stories, then it wouldn't be so, it must be me, right? Because it's like, no, it's not just me. It's all of us. That might help. That yeah. might fucking help.
That could help. And coming in with my little therapist hat right
Please
now.
Do.
Yeah.
Please do.
Research suggests mm-hmm. that this is not something that's someone's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Most pregnancies that are lost
yep.
are mostly due to genetic factors.
Yep.
You know, it's not your fault.
Anybody need to hear that again? Can you say that again?
Yeah. It is not your fault.
Mm-hmm. Even right now, we're at what? How far out am I from this experience now? I mean, 2 years?
2 years.
2 years? Even just hearing that, whew, I'm going to try real hard not to cry this entire podcast.
You can
but just
cry.
Hearing, I know, but I'm just sobbing into a microphone. So, but yeah, hearing it's not your fault. I mean, I heard from several people, we'll get into this, of like, what should you say? What shouldn't you say? But several people asked me and they were like, well, what happened? And it's like, does anyone, I mean, there are certainly pregnancy losses that happen where something happened. Absolutely. And then for the sort of 1 in 4, what do we say back? Like, what do you do? And somebody did say, I don't remember who it was, but somebody did say, they're like, oh, you were really working a lot, weren't you? And I was like, fuck.
Damn. Slap in the face of guilt.
Yep. All the logic went right out the window and was, horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
I'm going to come back in with my therapist hat again for 1 second.
That would be helpful. Okay. That would be really helpful.
Just to say that what you were describing with the intense guilt and denial and wishing you could go back and do things different, this is all part of the mourning cycle. This is grief. This is a very natural part of grieving something that you were excited about. You let yourself see it happen, play out for a moment.
Yeah.
You know, so that's really natural.
Yeah.
And to go through the other stages too and cycle through it. It's the anger, it's the rage, it's sadness, it's a moment of acceptance, and then back into the intense emotions.
Yeah. And I also think someone said, actually, I think someone said this to me. Oh, yeah, it was during this. Mr. Chaz, how are you? I hope you're doing great. Follow him. He's wonderful. Mr. Chaz was the one that said to me after the loss and said, grief has no timeline. And I'm going to tear up again thinking about that because here we are 2 years later. And even right now, you know, it's a lot less painful. It doesn't feel as raw. But even right now, cycling through feeling really guilty, even to this day, you know, and then for the past 2 years, I haven't felt guilty. Year and a half, let's call it, you know, where it's logic again, where it's like nothing could have happened. It's 1 in 4, yada, yada, yada. But the grief cycle doesn't stop. And that was one thing, even though I heard it, I had to keep mantraing it to myself because if you have other kids, or maybe you don't, but you have a job or you have a dog or you have anything else going on in your life, it can be really tempting, or at least for me as a type A. I told myself, you have 1 week. But I said it in a more gentle way. It was like, you know what? Like, take this week. Dina, can I take the week off? And you're like, of course, take the week off. Take the whole week. Cry, scream, let it out. Bah, bah, bah. And then when that week was up, mentally, that week was fucking up. Like, I was not gonna let myself, like, sure, I can still be sad, sure, but like, buck up, get back into it, like, get into work, you need to be writing, like, get in with your kids, like, what is wrong with you? It was just, it took
almost
a
like
long
like
time.
Be a normal, in quotes,
that was
functioning
my biggest,
person.
100%. That was my 2 days after, 2 days after. This is such a weird response in retrospect, especially for me. We just talked about how in Mexico I like to take a nap midday. So it's so interesting that my actual trauma response was the opposite. I thought I would want and allow myself to lay in bed for 3 months. That's like my natural desire. That's what I think. I couldn't identify it and then be like, this is grief, because it was so, like, such a wild way for me personally to respond. Of 2 days after, I remember I took both of my kids to the beach here in Denver. It's not really a beach, but I took them to the beach, and there's like a mile uphill and downhill, and it was 95 degrees outside. And no part of me thought, let alone the fact that you're emotionally grieving, but physically recovering. Nobody tells you, by the way, that after you have a pregnancy loss, no matter how early it is, you're in a postpartum period hormonally.
Yeah.
So you feel fucking wild. And sometimes that doesn't even Correct. Kick in until 7 days after. It doesn't even start until 7 days after. 3 weeks in, like, it is a whirl, and nobody told me, so I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know why I couldn't push these kids up a fucking mile mountain. I remember going on a date night and sobbing at date night 3 days later. Why am I at a date night? Who knows?
It's how you coped.
So wild. And I remember sitting at that date night, of course, already embarrassed that I was crying. The waiter came over. We hadn't even ordered yet. That says
sobbing
a lot.
Sobbing from moment one.
That says a lot. It was 4:30 p.m., so at least it was my preferred dinner time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him coming over, and it was mid-sentence with my husband, and I had just seen earlier that day Kylie Jenner announce her pregnancy, and it was so not her fault, but I was just livid.
I remember this. Livid,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, how dare she even post something so fucking vile. It wasn't vile at all. It was objectively like a beautiful video. And so the waiter walks over mid-sentence as I'm going, and fuck Kylie Jenner. And I slam my hands on the table while I'm sobbing. Then the next time we went back for date night, 3 weeks later, he looks at me and he goes, oh, you're the crying girl. What can I do for you?
We're back. Hi, it's me.
Sorry, Kylie.
It's the definition of being triggered.
Yeah.
And that is fair. Mm-hmm. That is so understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember too, you know, you were seeking out a lot of information about what was going to happen. So we talked about, you know, getting to the point of we're seeing the signs.
Yep.
Things are not looking great.
Yep.
We're concerned.
Yep.
You're concerned.
Yep.
And then what happens? Because you, mm-hmm. I remember you seeking out, like, what happens now? Because mm-hmm. nobody talks about it. We mm-hmm. don't talk about it enough. So I remember at the time, not only were you going to people asking, like, can I hear your experience? Mm-hmm. Because it's fucking lonely. Like you said, it's so isolating and painful.
Yeah.
But also, no one talks about the process of miscarriage and what is happening, what to expect.
I had no idea.
What is going on?
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I had no idea. I think what I knew or what I thought, and maybe other people are more versed, I don't know. And I've had a lot of friends, by the way, that had pregnancy losses. I was like right there with them. But I guess when you're not in it, you don't know the right things to say. You don't really ask. God, it feels like such a misstep from our society that we know everything about pregnancy going into it, sometimes, and nothing about the 25% chance of what something that will happen to you, like medically, physically, even just that, let alone the emotions that come along with it. Because I had... In my mind, I thought, and again, this is trigger warning, this is just raw, vulnerable, I thought blood. I thought gushing. I thought boop, and that's over. And that's it. And it's horrible. I thought it would be horrific. I did. I had no idea how many hundred different ways it could go and how agonizing it can be and how many different ways all the way through. Some miscarriages or pregnancy losses, they actually need medical assistance in removing the pregnancy. The heart stops beating, devastating, and then they have to wait and see if the things will happen on their own, or sometimes this will last for weeks and they're waiting and waiting and they end up needing a DNC, a surgery to remove the embryo. I truly, until I had my own experience and then talk to other friends about their experiences, I had never even heard of that. How is that possible? How am I getting pregnant in the first place? And it seems irresponsible that I have no idea that that's a very common scenario, by the way. And there's a million other ways, right? Like some people have to take really intense medication to assist them with the passing. Some people have ectopic pregnancies. The embryo is stuck in your fallopian tube and it's life-threatening, by the way. I had a friend who had to go to the ER and have the ectopic pregnancy. And then, of course, late stage pregnancy losses and medically everything that comes with that process. I just had absolutely no idea how many different ways pregnancy loss could go. So there were red flags with the levels dropping, and it was a fucking roller coaster because I was like, okay, this is it. And they told me as much. Like they were like, okay, you should prepare, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, cool. We go in, and this will get really emotional. We go in for the scan at whatever week it was. And like we see the heartbeat. And the scan before that, actually, we saw whatever it was, the sac. And they were like, well, this looks great. Like this doesn't look like anything. Like we would see some signs if this was bad. So like, I think you're actually maybe in the clear. Like, let's see next week. We go back next week. We see the heartbeat. We're celebrating. I mean, they're like, this is good. This, you wouldn't see this if something were wrong.
She, I remember, says, them telling, yeah, you that just some babies,
yep,
have lower HCG levels. They just, totally, do.
They stopped even checking the levels because it's like, this doesn't matter anymore. And now we're just going to go based off of what it looks like. And it looks great. There's the little heartbeat. Oh, man. And it was 3 hours later after we saw the heartbeat. Oh, and this is just a personal part of it. But from the minute we got that HCG, that call that the levels might be going down, I'd completely shut down. I was so excited for this. You know, I was trying really hard before this. This was the last month before we were going to be starting IVF. Oh, let me take a minute. Ooh, sounds snot into this microphone.
Yeah.
It was the last month. We were going to start IVF in September or July, whatever it was.
You had tried so hard for this baby.
Yeah. And it happened. And the minute I got that first phone call, I shut it all the way down. Which is what a lot of people do, by the way. I think the first 12 weeks is we're told to. Yeah, you totally did. There was, I remember having to convince you.
Yeah.
There was no red flag.
No. I hadn't miscarried in the past and I'd never been pregnant at that point.
Yep.
But every night I would wake up, go to the bathroom and just expect to see blood.
And it was like week 15 or something. And you were like, well, you never know. And I'm like, I think we do know, not to laugh, but like, it really was. And so I think a lot of us do that instinctually the first 12 weeks because we're just told like, well, whatever. But the second I got that phone call, it was, I shut all the way down, was like, nope, like I'm not going to do it. But I think what's amazing,
saw that heartbeat.
What I saw, and my husband, like when we saw that heartbeat, it's so fucked up and it was so hard, but I'm so grateful for it because I felt like just everything coursed through my body and my heart just like bursted, and I just loved that little baby on the screen for just, you know, a moment, just for those 3 hours. And I really thank God for that, even though it was really fucked up to have it be ripped away 3 hours later. But I always look back because
I can say, you know, that I loved that baby. And I think for all of us, you know, if I were to ever do it again, or when I had then eventually little baby, it was amazing. It was just a really hard work of the first 12 weeks being like, no matter what happens, I'm going to love the shit out of this baby that's inside of me. Like, you don't have to wait for 12 weeks. Like,
so I guess then too, you know, that was a roller coaster.
Yep.
That you went on.
So that was the roller coaster that I never knew that it could be 100 different ways. Sometimes that happens to some people. Sometimes it's just in the middle of the night. They have no idea. 100 different ways. Yep. Yeah.
So what then, did you do from there?
Then I went home and then I started cramping and I thought maybe it was from the ultrasound and it was very clear that it was not. And I do just wish that people talked about it more. I mean, I don't want to go into too much detail, but I wish I would have known because I was shocked. Like, I was shocked. And I went to the bathroom and it was happening and it was pretty fucking clear. It was very clear. I was also bleeding, by the way, all the way leading up to this, right?
Yeah.
A little bit. I remember filming for Good Morning America.
Yep.
And I looked back at that interview. I was like, this is a shitty ass interview because I was miscarrying on the screen.
Yeah.
But I was bleeding for weeks. So I just, it was a shock response and I wasn't sure it was happening. And thankfully the girls were watching TV. My husband ran upstairs because I'm screaming. And oh God, it's just awful. You know, just us like holding each other. I remember sending you a photo.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dina. Because I didn't know. I was like, is this what it looks like? Nobody fucking tells you. And I know it's hard to think about in advance, but shit.
It's even scarier when you don't know what to expect.
Yep. Like, hey, this is what it looks like. So, you know, I mean, this is something too. Again, it might be too far, but no one talks about what do you do with it? Because in 1 second, I almost flushed it down the toilet. Again, this might be very triggering. But that was something I saw in the DMs. So I know we need to talk about it because I saw thousands of people into the DMs being like, either they regretted what they did in the moment or the opposite, or where do you have a ceremony? It's not talked about. There's not a funeral. There's not a specific thing to do. And I think, and I should have fact checked this before we came on, but I believe there's a Japanese ceremony that it's very common to do this. And they have this little statue and it's like, you're supposed to have this ritual so that you can move forward and you're not just stuck.
And you can do whatever feels right. You can
whatever
make
you
up
want.
A ritual.
You can ritual.
Make up a ceremony.
Yep. 100%. I remember even talking to my other good friend, Dr. Cassidy. Shout out Dr. Cassidy. She's great. I'm just shouting people out on Instagram.
All our friends.
Follow. Yeah, exactly. And we were also, this is another part, again, that nobody tells you about, is I felt, I'll just use the word, fucking crazy. I felt like a fucking just crazy person afterwards. I had biological urges because what I ended up doing with it was I put it in a cup, I put the baby, let's call it the baby. I put the baby in the cup. I couldn't look at it for a few days, just kept him or her in the closet, or they in the closet. And I decided I did want to do something. So we went outside and we like went to this beautiful area with flowers, open space, water. We buried him, her. I always call her. I don't know why. Sobbed. And it was the best thing we ever did, was doing that ritual. Came back home. But I felt like a fucking crazy person hormonally because it started to rain. And I just remember like wanting to go out there and like dig the baby back up and like put the baby back inside of me somehow. It made no logical sense, but there were so many like urges that were really scary. The hormones and the darkness, and it was just fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, it's so untalked about. It's so, like you said at the beginning, like, go back to work, go do this. Like, oh, you had a miscarriage. I'm so sorry. Move on, you know? And for me, it wasn't that way. It was, 3-6 months, a year of it being really hard. Like, really, really, really through the roof hard.
Yeah. Ugh, I'm crying too.
Oh, sorry.
Because for me too, like, God, core memory of just going through it with you was being at the hospital.
Oh, yeah. You were there.
After you were, like, screaming in your house, we went to the hospital, yep. And I just...
Dina was there with me. My husband took care of the kids. Yeah, they wouldn't let you in, but you were at the hospital.
I sat on a bench outside, like, in the rain. And I just remember you walking out and looking at me, and you said, there's nothing in there anymore. And it was just,
horrible.
It was horrible.
I remember coming home that night. This is such a weird thing too, but such a core memory. I remember coming home that night and I hadn't drank alcohol in a long time because we were trying and I was like trying all these fucking things to, you know, like get pregnant. And I hadn't had alcohol. Obviously, I was pregnant too. So it had been so long. And I remember coming home from that hospital, walking in. My husband was drinking straight tequila because that's what he does sometimes. I can barely handle the taste of wine, you know? Like, I can't, if I have a sip of something, I'll almost throw up of, like, a whiskey or, like, smelling it. I came home, I poured more into that cup, and then I drank that cup all the way down, and there was no sensation in my mouth, my body, my esophagus. I was so physically detached after that hospital visit. That I didn't feel a single thing. And then I think it probably lasted weeks, right? I felt fucking nothing.
Yeah. Makes sense after your body just went through such a trauma.
Yep.
You know? And the trauma is so tied to your body.
Yeah.
To just want to get away from your body.
Yeah.
And not feel it. Not feel anything. Fuck. It's so hard. There are a lot of things and a lot of ways people try to support friends.
Oh, yeah.
Some ways help.
Yep.
Some things don't help.
Yeah.
And I'm curious.
And they mean well. And they mean do well, mean well. Usually. Yes.
And as someone who has gone through this experience, what are some things that people commonly say or said that just were not helpful?
Let's just start with that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Things that were not helpful. What did you do or what happened?
I remember from like that time in our lives. Yeah.
I wrote it down.
It was things also like, this is God's plan. Everything is meant to be.
Oh, fuck.
It happened for a reason.
Oh, fuck.
At least you have two kids already.
I'm blacking all of this out. Yep. Okay, wait. Keep going.
At least you have two healthy kids. Be grateful for that.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm blacking out. I think it's extra level when you live on the internet because...
That's true.
I read horrific things, like, because it was that, but it's as if I'm not a real person. So it was like, oh, the bitch who has two kids is whining about her pregnancy loss. And then there were rumors of, like, faking it. And then someone said, like... Maybe if her house wasn't so dirty, then she wouldn't have lost it. So I don't think that's common for most people. Most people, it's the like, it was God's plan. Oh, one real life person did say to me, well, now you can try for a boy.
Oh, God.
And I was like, we didn't even know what it was, Susan. Like, what are you fucking saying? Oh, one is at least it was early. At least it was early. Do you want to pause there? Because that one... I think happens a lot as if that's better. You're allowed to grieve no matter where you were in the process of pregnancy.
There you are.
Yeah, I think that's it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So then let's do the flip side of that.
Okay, yeah. This is better for me.
Flip side.
Okay.
So having gone through this experience,
yeah,
how was it helpful for people to show up? What kind of support did you want?
I think this is also probably different for everyone. But shit, I really did love a meal train. Like, I chose to share the pregnancy early, and I also chose to share the miscarriage. I did wait, maybe it was like 3 or 4 days because social media wasn't it, whatever it was. I waited a few days, and those few days were the worst, darkest, loneliest. And when I say dark, I mean real dark. And once I shared, it was still horrible, but it wasn't darkness and alone. Yeah. Type of feeling. I was set, like, meal trains were set up, flowers were sent, voice notes from 13 different friends or people that I hadn't even met in real life, people through Instagram, a random trainer of a friend, random people that I can think of to this day that I was not that close to, not really just acquainted, the random neighbor, the mom from school that I, you know, rarely talk to. These people, these women lifted me up because they could say all the things that a lot of people didn't know what to say, which is like, it's not your fault, going through their stories, all of that. From the people who hadn't been through it, one of the most helpful things I think they said was Lisa, who is our director of business ops now at Big Little Feelings, but an old-time friend. She was very smart because she'll be the first one to recognize she can be a touch positive. She can be a touch positive. So it would be very tempting to say something like, at least it was early. It's God, you can keep trying. And she said something and she said, I don't know what to say right now. I'm here. And that, like, it makes me want to cry to this day because what a good thing to say when you don't know what to say.
Yeah.
It's the worst when you can tell somebody is just very uncomfortable. And that it makes sense to be uncomfortable. But then they spit out things that maybe they shouldn't say. And the best is just to recognize. And that's the same thing you did, by the way, which is just like sitting there. You know, you don't actually have to say anything. And you were really good in that way, too, which you're always that good, which is just holding that space.
Yeah.
Man. Anyone listening that this was like heavy for, or if you've been through it or you're going through it, I just wish I could give you a really big hug because like you're not overreacting. This is fucked up. This is hard. This is hard. One day it'll be less hard, but it's still, it's always going to stay with you.
Yeah. And you're not alone.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to shift gears into listener questions.
Yes, let's do questions.
So these are all focused on miscarriage.
Okay.
First question is, how did your husband react to the loss? What was that like?
Ooh, this is such an interesting question. So this is another core memory of that time. When it first happened, the same way that I reacted in such a interesting way, I would say, right? Like pushing, keep going, be normal. He reacted in a really weird way too, which was, I remember you actually sent your babysitter, Emily. I had never used a babysitter with my children until that day. Never, because of postpartum anxiety, a whole slew of issues, but I didn't trust anyone with my kids. And you were, that day, you were like, Kristen, you need to rest. You need help. It's okay to have help. You sent your babysitter literally from your house over to my house. And so the babysitter was watching the girls and I was in bed sobbing as one would. And my husband walks in and he goes, babe, I'm going to the Mercedes dealership. And I'm like, what? He's like, I'm just going to go test drive some cars. I'm going to go test drive a G-Wagon. Mind you, we're not getting a Mercedes. Okay. We are not in the market for a new car. If we were, we're not getting a Mercedes. We're certainly not getting a G-Wagon. Okay. Like, not even on the like remote possibility. So this was not like, okay, there's something else to do on the to-do list. I'm going to busy myself. This was just like, oh, out of left field, I'm going to go to the Mercedes dealership and drive a G-Wagon. I just thought that was the oddest thing in the world at the time because I thought he would come in, he would go cry, he would be sobbing, he would be down. I didn't expect that. And then he stayed very strong and he took care of the kids and he took care of the meals because I was a little bit emotionally, physically incapacitated. And I don't think, just like not enough people talk, no men talk about it. At least I can find stories of women. How do men process and do they have the right to grieve? Because they do.
Yeah.
They do. But it's just not inherent, I guess. And it didn't physically happen to them. So he was just carrying on like nothing was happening. And it was totally fine. And being like, strong, 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 strong. And it wasn't until we did that ritual where we went to the water and we buried what I'll call the baby, that, I mean, he was just like full body shaking, sobs, like wailing. Luckily, this is like no one is around. It's a reservoir in the middle of Colorado, just wailing and screaming, like letting it out. And he actually, funnily enough, we were on the fence about having a third for a long time. Then I knew I wanted a third. He was still on the fence. And the moment that that happened with that ritual was like the moment that he needed. And from that moment on was like missing. Like, I just remember him saying so often, being like, I really miss the baby right now, you know, which again, for men, I just don't think is as societally spoken about or talked about or able to like have those emotions, those feelings, that even though you weren't carrying it and it was super early-ish, to be like, I miss the baby, and to cry and to grieve together. Yeah. After we did that ritual, we were able to do that.
I'm so glad you guys did that ritual, because it was so important for you to be able to feel those feelings.
Yeah.
Fully, because that is the only way you can move through them, is to feel them fully.
And it helps you like process. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help you close a chapter, because it keeps going. But there is something about a closure of a moment, and like taking a moment together, because otherwise you're just two ships grieving in very different ways. You're going to a Mercedes dealership. I'm just in the depths of despair trying to fucking unbury our baby. Like, it really brings you together for a moment, which is what funerals are about, which is what all rituals are about. So, yeah, I'm glad we did that.
Yeah.
Okay, we have another question. You went on to have a baby in the end. He's so cute, by the way. Thank you. He's very cute. I'm curious how the loss factored into the pregnancy and beyond. That is a really good question. Yeah. Your face. You want to take it away? How did the loss affect me, Dina?
Bless therapy. Every episode. Bless therapy.
I was in weekly therapy every single week after the miscarriage and beyond. I did EMDR for the miscarriage, for the hospital experience, for like multifaceted parts of the miscarriage. I went to therapy every single week of my pregnancy because I was so scared the entire time. I was terrified the entire pregnancy. I thought I was going to lose the pregnancy no matter how far I got. It wasn't like logical. It wasn't like, oh, we're at 20-week scan. Nope. That's not. I felt really guilty and scared because I wasn't connecting no matter what I did, no matter what I tried, no matter how hard I knew, like, even if I lose this baby, I'm going to connect. I couldn't fucking do it.
Did he feel real? Even when you were holding him?
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
I had to go to therapy for this, but for a different reason. But
yeah, yours. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Another story for another day.
Well, we will be doing an episode all about postpartum anxiety. Wait for that. Yeah, it was, you know, I think that most pregnancies are affected when you've had a loss, no matter how early or far along. It's going to show up with subsequent pregnancies. It certainly did for mine. And then for me, it did kind of subside when he came, actually, when I think about it. I was so terrified because with my second, I had a similar experience to you, which was there was no reason. There was no logic. I just knew she was going to go, you know, like there wasn't. And when she was here, I still didn't feel it. And I was terrified that was going to happen again. And I didn't feel connected to her because I knew I was going to lose her. Fuck postpartum anxiety. That did not happen with this one. And who knows why? I really just think it's literal postpartum anxiety. And I didn't get postpartum anxiety with this pregnancy.
Yeah.
And so it was a very different experience than having your rainbow baby, and you've been trying and you went through so much, and then to have him. And one thing I think we, not to always go back to the negative, here we are. One thing I don't think people talk enough about, though, is like, it is incredible having the rainbow baby, because all the things that I would not complain about, but that were horrible about the first one, I was like, oh, thank God. Oh, thank God. Like, I will stay up all night. Like, it just, it's your rainbow baby. Like, it's so different. But what people don't talk about is, like, to this day, I still miss that other baby, you know? Yeah. I remember after I lost that baby being like, I was so fucking angry. And I don't remember who I shouted it at. It might have been you. It was somebody who didn't even say anything wrong. But I remember screaming at someone and being like, I don't want another fucking baby. I want that baby. You know? And so I do think a hard part of balancing is being like so grateful for this baby that you have in your arms, which, by the way, I just want to say, not everybody ends up getting their rainbow baby. So I am incredibly privileged in that way. And not a day goes by that I don't recognize that.
And an empowering stat.
Yep.
Stats show.
Go ahead.
85%.
Yes.
Of women and birthing people will go on to get that rainbow baby.
Thank you for bringing that in, Dina.
No problem.
Thank you. And if you're in the other percentage, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Fuck that, man. This is all fucked up.
And it's not your fault.
It's not your fault. Nobody talks about it. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a complicated process. And, like, every Christmas, one of my friends, the one, the school mom, who's, by the way, just had her rainbow baby, IVF, same experience. Every Christmas, she has an ornament for the baby that she lost. And I still, to this day, just wonder, like, all the time I beat myself up, being like, what's wrong with me? Like, why don't I have something? Why does it feel silly to have, like, it was early. You shouldn't have an ornament, or you shouldn't do this. So maybe I'm going to explore that, because it's complicated emotions once you get the baby that you were wanting and still mourning the baby that you lost.
Yeah. And it doesn't make you ungrateful in any shape or form.
That's nice to hear. Okay. I think that's where we leave it. Honestly, this was therapeutic. This was cathartic. Thank you, Dina. Thank you, listener. Thank you for being here. And if you have been there, I'm sending you the biggest hug. I thank you for being here and walking alongside this with me. If you are struggling with toddler or preschooler tantrums, pushback, discipline, picky eating, just all the confusing things, this podcast, we can only scratch the surface. If you need help, our course, Winning the Toddler Stage, is here to help. It is aptly nicknamed the Toddler Manual because it truly has every single thing you could possibly struggle with under the sun between the ages of 1 and 6 within one course. We're not going to do a bunch of workshops. You have to buy the sleep guide and the picky eating guide and the this guide and the that guide. No, everything you could possibly need for ages 1 through 6 is all in this one course. We were never meant to do this parenting thing alone. You deserve to have help. We are here for you. You can find that course at biglittlefeelings.com, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Big Little Feelings. We give free tips every single day. They might change your life with one free tip.
Thank you so much for being here with us. This has been an Odyssey production, executive produced by Lauren LaGrasso, produced by Daniela Silva, edited by Bob Tabador, and theme music composed by Liz Full. Then studio lighting designed by Shane Sackett and designed by Jackie Shearman. Special thanks to Odyssey Executive Vice President and Head of Podcasts, Jenna Weiss-Berman. And thank you for being here with us. We can't wait till next week.